Hello and welcome to the Giving Voice to Depression podcast. I'm Terry, the creator and co-host of this podcast. I've lived with depression most of my life, and I know how easy it can be to feel all alone in the experience. I'm not alone, and you aren't either.
And I'm Dr. Anita Sands, a licensed clinical psychologist with a number of my own diagnoses, all of which bring a certain amount of anxiety and depression along with them. There is great power in shared experiences. We share our own as we engage in intimate and candid conversations with our weekly guests, exploring different perspectives on and experiences with depression.
We keep it real because depression is real. We keep it hopeful because there truly is hope in spite of what depression tells you. We would like to acknowledge our new partnership with Recovery.com. Recovery.com provides resources and information for individuals seeking treatment for mental health or addiction issues. It offers a fact-checked and vetted online platform of treatment centers to help individuals find the right path to recovery. This episode is sponsored by the AB Corcor Foundation for Mental Health.
While Terry and I research and record interviews for new episodes in the coming weeks, please enjoy this powerful episode from our archive.
This episode is from our earlier years when I co-hosted with my sister Bridget.
We ended season two with four suicide prevention episodes, emphasizing the need to prepare for and be willing to have difficult and potentially life-saving conversations with someone who's suicidal. You're about to hear a first-person account of such an encounter. Johnny, a 20-year-old in the UK, had gone to a bridge to end his life. Neil, a young man with no mental health training but a big heart, saw him and stopped. We're lucky enough to have talked to both. We begin with Neil, the stranger on the bridge.
The day was, it was horrible. It was cold. It was freezing cold. It, you know, in London, January is our winter time. So middle of winter, about 9 o'clock in the morning, just after the rush hour, Monday morning, 14th of January, and it's raining. And you come out of Waterloo train station, and right in front of you is this huge bridge into the centre of London. So, like, where you have, like, Leicester Square, Covent Garden, Piccadilly Circus and all the tourist area like that. At any time of day, you know, so much traffic going over this bridge. You can see, like, 100 people in your periphery. There's the buses, the cyclists, the pedestrians, the taxis, everything.
And now Johnny.
I went to that bridge and I built up the kind of... I don't want to say courage, but you know what I mean.
Right.
I built up the courage to go and do it, and I... You know, nothing was going to stop me.
So coming out onto this, out of the train station, onto the bridge, and there's this guy sitting on the side of Waterloo Bridge.
I wasn't in my right mind. So I left the hospital in jeans and a t-shirt, and I was absolutely freezing on that cold bridge.
And on the bridge, there's these railings, these like white railings, and he's sitting like on top of the railings with his feet over the side facing the water. You know, huge drop below.
Not far from actually where I am sitting right now. So I've just been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which is like schizophrenia and bipolar. And I think it was getting that diagnosis. That was it for me. I just gave up pretty much. I just thought my life's over, you know, I'm not going to be able to... All the things that I wanted to do in life, all the hopes and the dreams that I had just suddenly... I just literally just came to nothing. I just thought I'm never going to get better. I was really unwell. And I just thought the best thing to do was, you know, not just for me, but for my family. I thought the best thing to do is just not be here anymore. And so I went to this bridge and...
Lots of people walked by, like so many people. And they looked... You know, and they looked and then they just kind of carried on. And I thought, oh, I can't do that. So I walked over and I said, you know, hi, how are you doing? Why are you sitting on the bridge? And yeah, that's when he told me that he was going to kill himself.
I remember at first when the stranger came up to me, I was just like, just go away, you know, just go away. Just leave me alone. There's nothing you can say. you know, I've made my decision and I don't need you. I don't, no one can change my mind. Like, it was like my only way out, my only exit was to do this. And no one was going to convince me otherwise.
At first, he didn't really want me there. But then he did, you know, he started to open up to me and tell me, like, you know, that he was, he'd run away from a hospital. He was in a psychiatric hospital and he couldn't take it there anymore. The whole time I'm thinking, you know, maybe we can come to a decision together. Maybe I can persuade him to use my phone to call his family or something, okay? Because what I didn't want to do was just kind of give him ideas or suggestions or grab him off the bridge. Or, you know, I wanted to just remain calm and just try and come to a decision together. So that seemed like the best option.
I don't know. There was something different about this guy because he just, I don't know, he just listened in a way I hadn't been listened to before. Hmm. He said two things to me that really stuck out. And the first thing he said to me was, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. That's what he said. He said, no reason to be embarrassed or ashamed.
Wow.
And I've never heard anyone say that before because, you know, the main reason that I got to that stage, because I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed about all the things that were happening in my head. Mm. You know, I was hearing a voice. I was delusional and I was embarrassed that I was in a hospital. I was struggling with my sexuality as well. And I I come from a Jewish family and really embarrassed about that. The embarrassment, the shame, That was the biggest thing for me. And that's why I wanted to end my life. So for someone just to say to me, you know, it's fine. What you, this embarrassment is fine. I just right. hadn't heard anyone say anything like that before. And it was so powerful. It was so powerful. And that, yeah. And it made me talk.
One thing I could tell, like he wasn't there for anybody's attention. You know, he was in his own world, you know.
The second key thing he said to me, which again, no one has said to me before, was, I think you'll be all right. You know, I think you're going to get better. Mm. And, you know, again, no one has said that to me before. In the hospital where I was, the outlook wasn't particularly good. Mm. You know, I was pretty unwell. But here was this complete stranger that, you know,
gave you hope.
Gave me hope. He didn't know anything about me, but he wasn't a professional or whatever, but he believed, I thought he really believed that I would get better. And having that faith, I don't know, just no one had that faith in me before. I didn't have that faith in myself, hence why I was there. But he didn't. He believed in a way that I needed to hear, you know? And that was the thing. That was the moment that I was just, I questioned what I was about to do, and I just, you know, I don't know. Yeah, he gave me hope, and he said to me, let's go
and sit down. There's a coffee shop at the end of the bridge, and you know, it's warm, and you know, you can take a bit more time, tell me what's going on. And
so when he said, you know, let's go somewhere warm and let's go for a coffee, and he kept suggesting it, and eventually I agreed. I wanted to be somewhere warm and safe, and you know, I felt like I could trust him now, and so it seemed like the right thing to do. And
So you came over the railing?
I came over the railings to the pavement. And when I got to the pavement, that's when everything kind of changed.
A police car came out of nowhere, just came like screeching up beside us. The door opened, the police came out, and then it was just back to square one again. You know, he was shocked.
Just, it was almost like everything, that whole conversation had just come to nothing because all that faith that he'd given me and that hope just suddenly went when I saw them. And I ran back to go over the bridge.
That's when I grabbed him.
Neil actually grabbed me, this stranger grabbed me and stopped me, and he held me in his arms, and the police charged for me, and they
put handcuffs on him, they restrained him, and they put him in the back of the police car. So they did, so they took him away, and when I did my statement with them and I told them everything I knew, and then they said, look, please just go back to work. So I kind of went back to work, and all of a sudden that was it again. I could kind of hear all the traffic and the noise again, because when I was talking to him, like, it was almost like it wasn't there. You know, I was so engaged in this conversation.
And then we were separated, me and this guy, this back then this stranger, was separated, and that was it. And which I felt really sad about, because, you know, I built up this trust with him, and suddenly it was just... that was broken, and I was kind of back with the authorities, back with the professionals, and I just felt uneasy again.
I'm just struck to my core by his words saying, I was listened to in a way that I haven't ever been listened to before.
That's just beautiful. And
I hear this stranger, you know, walks up without an education, without prior experience, and is able to be present in the most potent, powerful way in the face of this crisis. It's right. Just beautiful.
It's an incredible story. And we can say, you know, you can hear a lesson and you can, you know, feel it in your head, and you can hear a lesson and you can feel it in your heart. And then you hear this and you feel it in your gut. You know, it's a different level of understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also said that he believed in me in a way that I needed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, who doesn't want to be believed, and who can call that up within themselves in the face of crisis? I'm just so touched.
And before we wrap up this episode, I just want to share one more little bit of the conversation I had with Johnny, and because it's how we settled on the title for the episode.
So as I think of this episode, I can't decide if it should be called The Power of Compassion or The Power of Giving a Damn. Which do you think it is?
Oh, wow. I think, do you know what? I think it's compassion. I think compassion. Mm-hmm. I think compassion could go such a long way, honestly. I mean, we can all give a damn about something. I mean, I think, you know, I reckon some of those people that walked past me on the bridge gave a damn.
Right.
But it's the compassion. It's the, you know, I've been in the mental health care system in the UK for 10 years now. I'm 30 now, and I've been in and out of hospital and seen different psychiatrists and therapists. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think they all give a damn, but it's the ones that have shown me the most compassion. You know, the nurses or my psychiatrist or my therapist, it's the compassion. It's the compassion and the empathy and the, and I keep saying it, but the patience as well. I think patience mm-hmm. is so important because it's so hard to talk. We don't have to have been in that person's situation.
Right.
You know, Neil hadn't been in my situation yet. He was still able to show me compassion. And I think we can all do that, can't we? I think we can all. And Neil calls it being an ally, which I really like. He calls it being an ally because it is. It's just being an ally and being there for someone. And really, anyone could do that. Anyone could do that, you know.
Anyone can do that.
And yet think how many people looked and passed by. Well, amazingly, this isn't the end of their story. In fact, it's just the beginning. And we'll continue on with their amazing connection in part two next week.
Can hardly wait.
This interview was originally conducted with a grant from the Charles E. Kubley Foundation.
We truly hope that our podcast brings a little more understanding, helps you better articulate and reflect on your own experience with depression, or better understand how to support someone else who is struggling.
If this episode has been of comfort or value to you, know that there are hundreds of others like it in our archive, which you can easily find at our website, givingvoicetodepression.com. And remember, if you're struggling, speak up, even if it's hard. If someone else is struggling, take the time to listen.